Hiring can be challenging, but ZipRecruiter makes it fast and easy. We talked to COO Dylan Miskowitz, who needed to hire a director of coffee for his company, Cafe Altura.
We would look through lots of applications for people who were not qualified. It definitely felt like we were looking for a needle in a haystack.
So Dylan started using ZipRecruiter and found his perfect candidate in a few days. ZipRecruiter's powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply, which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/needle.
We're very impressed with how quickly we had quality candidates apply through ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is a powerful tool in our hiring process.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And now you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/needle. That's ZipRecruiter.com/needle. ZipRecruiter.com/needle.
A health threat anywhere is a health threat everywhere. I'm Dr. Phil. A new coronavirus outbreak called COVID-19 started in China and is spreading to many countries, including the U.S. It's critical to get the facts about how to protect our friends and loved ones. While CDC is working with states and communities to stop the spread of the virus, health workers and emergency response efforts need our support. The CDC Foundation, a nonprofit organization, is focusing on immediate and critical needs that help protect our communities here at home and those around the world. We can all play a role in stopping this deadly virus. Get updates, learn how to protect your friends and family, and find out how to help. Go to cdcfoundation.org. That's cdcfoundation.org. Together, our impact is greater.
This has been a public service announcement brought to you by the CDC Foundation.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, this is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. Sports Radio 670 The Score, our radio.com sports station, WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago. The
Score! This hour is brought to you by the Home Loan Expert.
Two white guys doing Lawrence Holmes show.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
That's the exchange rate. That's actually how many it takes to do Lawrence Holmes' show. So we're going to do it for the next couple hours. We're here. We're hanging out. So this has been, I'm trying to add up the total radio that I've been doing. Let's see, 7 hours yesterday, 5 hours today with no sports.
Your math skills are unparalleled. That'll
be 12 hours?
Five, seven, right? One.
Two, three.
I can only count if I do it like this.
One, two, three, four, five, six.
Hey, so I'm chasing this down, and it's just getting tweeted a couple of minutes ago. You know, Jeff Goodman, the basketball analyst over at Stadium, he had a couple reports earlier yesterday, I should say. He's got a report on Twitter now saying that the NCAA's Council Coordination Committee has agreed to grant relief for the use of a season of competition for student athletes who have participated in spring sports.
Relief meaning the season doesn't count?
Committee will also discuss issues for winter sport student athletes. That would be basketball. Winter sport, right?
Yes.
So are we in a territory now where the NCAA, hold me, might actually be doing the right thing?
Now we're through the looking glass.
That is absolutely bizarre. I mean, we gotta find more on this. I don't, you know, Jeff knows his stuff, but I haven't seen it anywhere else, and we're gonna track it down best we can. But as I understand this means that seniors who are gonna leave, or juniors who might have, that you get an extra year of eligibility if you were involved in the spring and maybe the winter sport.
Well, that's pretty cool. If you want it, you know, stick around another year, you get like a grad year or something.
I think it was JJ Cooper, Baseball America, was tweeting about this last night before it became something that got reported. This idea that you might get an extra year of eligibility. You think about what that does for juniors in baseball. JJ Cooper's Baseball America, he's, you know, in that prospect college baseball kind of realm, gives juniors a lot of leverage, knowing that they, you know, if you're going to get drafted in that 30 or 40 range, you don't get, you don't have a baseball team killing you, a Major League Baseball team killing you for leverage, because you can go back, you know, or even seniors who might have that extra run.
Right, that allows you to at least threaten to go back.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. It's so kind of hard to work out exactly.
If you draft me higher and cut me a little bigger bonus check, maybe I won't.
What this may also do, I know this year's NBA draft class wasn't supposed to be all that great, but if you start looking at how if they grant the extra year of eligibility to those who were involved, you start looking out, we weren't too many years away from the one and done being removed.
Yeah.
And remember, we were talking about how that draft class, whatever that first year of not having the one and done rule is almost going to be like a double draft class anyway, because you'll have all the 18-year-olds who don't have to go to college, plus the guys that were in college for the 1 year.
But what about your recruiting class that you already have? You have a finite number of scholarships.
So,
you know, if everybody opts in and comes back and uses that year, you're out of scholarships.
No doubt. That's the right question. And I have to imagine that if they're going to grant the extra year, then the scholarship number is just going to increase.
It has to, because you've already offered a whole class.
Right. And now the NCAA, and you can't let those kids in the lurch. So now, as an NCAA, as an entity, my God, we're on the precipice of the NCAA doing something that might actually matter. As an entity, you then have to reach into your very, very deep pockets and help pay for these kids' schools again? Good. That's good. That's what ought to be done.
Wow.
That'd be terrific. Good, I hope this is right. I hope this is where they end up going with this.
The assembled media, before they were kicked out of the facilities down at Sloan Park for the deep cleaning, because that's what's happening right now. No players, no staff, no media. That is being scrubbed down right now to get out whatever vestiges of virus might have made it in there. But there's no confirmed cases. This is all being done prophylactically by the Cubs, and they wanted the players to go home to their families. So one Cub who talked about this sort of surreal experience everybody's going through is outfielder Jason Hayward.
Because our season's so long, because we deal with playing sick all the time, playing hurt with little stuff, like, it's kind of the norm for us. So we don't notice it as much, I guess. So I feel like if anybody would notice it last, it would be us, because we're just used to, hey, show up, we got to work today. You know, you talk about it, you joke about it. Not the virus, but just about, oh, you're sick today, or your headache, or whatever it is. You know, didn't get sleep last night. So as far as feeling safe, I feel like in that sense, I kind of feel normal, because that's just the norm for us.
And we talked to Patrick Manley about it, too, that they're used to playing through stuff.
Yeah, but step up and play.
But they've got a responsibility at this point not to. It's sort of the way I phrased it when we were talking to Darren Rovell. We were talking about sports brings us together.
Yeah.
Now, it's sports' job now to be part of not bringing you together in that regard. It's really important that sports doesn't bring people together, because people together share germs.
Obviously. I wonder, too, if... You know, this idea of pushing through stuff the way, you know, baseball players specifically and football players too kind of force through. I wonder if this, we'll all have a story about how this changed us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this has never happened before. This is completely different than a lot of other scenarios that even sound just a little bit like this. I know you and Terry were on air during 9/11. There have been massive moments in our history that affect the fabric of our sports conversation, that sometimes remove sports from the conversation altogether. And I think people remember those times as much or more than any others. But this will, you know, like people who grew up during a Great Depression and they're, you know, piling money underneath their mattresses because they didn't trust banks anymore. Like this changes endemically a group of people.
Reusing aluminum foil.
No doubt, man.
Saving string.
There will be, you know, it won't be as trite as forcing your way through a rough nine innings of baseball or anything like that, but there's going to be a group of people, a generation of people affected by whatever this is, and in whatever way they end up getting affected, and it'll be somewhat permanent, I think.
Yeah, and this is already still at the preventative measures part of it. We're not into the thousands and thousands and thousands of people being sick part of it yet.
Nope.
That's next. We're hoping to ward that off. And you heard Theo use the phrase flatten the curve.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you said, I hope everybody has retweeted what those curves look like and what it means to flatten the curve, what it means to make sure that the spike in cases doesn't overwhelm healthcare, and we don't have rationing of oxygen, and we don't have, you know, triaging of essentials. That is part of making it a longer process, a longer, slower process, by slowing the burn of it so it doesn't get everybody at once. That's how you end up with mass deaths. You
right.
make sure that you keep the curve underneath that threshold level of the ability of our systems to continue to care. And it's really easy to see what flattening the curve means. And this is also super important too. If we do this right, all the cancellations of everything, you know, and whether it's all our public gatherings, et cetera, if we do it right and we really get it right, it will look after the fact like an overreaction. And we'll have that, but that's what you want.
Yep. Has to be that way.
You'll have really dumb people like, we didn't need to do it. See, we wasted all this time and all this money.
The absence of evidence isn't the evidence of absence, right?
Outstanding. Yes. If we as a society, if we do this correctly, it will appear after the fact to have been an overreaction. It's not. It means we did it. It means we did it. If all of this social distancing and all of our isolation and all of our best care, if we get the curve flattened out just right, it's going to appear that we didn't need to do it, when in fact it was exactly what we should have done.
I think, you know, I had to be reminded of this too by somebody who's a little closer to the healthcare system than I am. But, you know, the idea of flattening the curve doesn't just, and you talked about it a bit here, but it doesn't just relate to the coronavirus and those who are affected by it, carry it, get treated for it, all that kind of stuff. But as you fill up beds, services, ventilators, monitors, you know, all this other stuff, those who are in accidents, have something happen to them, need the very same services that the vast number of people may need with the coronavirus and aren't able to get to those things.
Yeah, there's regular garden variety sick and injured people.
Yep.
Yep.
That stuff gets affected too. So if you're, you know, walking around kind of thinking, oh, I'm asymptomatic, I don't have any of this kind of stuff, I haven't been exposed, I haven't traveled, all this sort of thing, that's true. But because the healthcare system is dealing with so many people and will deal with so many more people over the coming days and weeks, that doesn't mean that your own access to the things you need in case of some sort of emergency won't be affected. That's how this pandemic, that's how a pandemic ends up bringing in a whole lot of collateral damage, human lives that get affected because they aren't able to access the same kinds of things that they would have otherwise been able to 2, 3, 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, the 630 says if people didn't die, it means it worked. No, people are going to die. There will be, we know what the percentages are. We know how lethal this is. What we need is just, for now, we need the data, which means we need testing. We need all the test kits. We need what they did in South Korea with the drive-thrus. Testing, testing, testing. And it's possible that if more, what happens is the sickest people get the tests, the sickest people become the confirmed cases, mm-hmm. the sickest people are more likely to die. It does skew the mortality rates early on. And it will, the mortality rate obviously will come down if more people are tested and are either less symptomatic or maybe even completely asymptomatic and don't suffer the same fate. It's not a neutral sample of positive tests right now, because say, well, you have to be sick, you have to be showing a certain kind of symptoms to reach the threshold of being tested, you're already in a higher likelihood group for mortality.
Right.
So
right.
That's why we need better data, because we need more tests, we need better tests, we need a better coordinated operation. Now listen to what Theo said over and over and over again. Other countries have been so much better about testing, about knowing who to put where and when, in which bed, or how far away, for how long. It starts with knowing who's got it and who doesn't.
Yeah. First and foremost, that's what it is. More data helps. I was just reading this too. Scott Merkin and Adam Hogue, guys who cover the White Sox, are tweeting, the White Sox facility in Arizona remains open to players. GM Rick Hahn says they'll spend the weekend doing cage work, throwing off the mound, some light work too. Didn't rule out simulated games on the backfields in the future. Obviously, that's to see what comes over the next couple of days. I wonder, first and foremost, best advice is from Dave Wannstedt. Go to cdc.gov or GOV, either one. It'll go to the same place, I promise you. And follow the instructions there. Follow the instructions of your healthcare provider. But I wonder, I think I caught you and Parkins talking about it yesterday, and then I had to go in to get a haircut and then came back out without the radio on. Were you talking about the Joe Sheehan tweet, just kind of the theoretical, how long would it take to get a second spring training back up running and how long it's going to be before
what the baseball season incubation period
right
is.
I was thinking about it myself, the you know, because I think we're going to learn in a lot of instances in baseball specifically, like spring training is too long and you don't need all that kind of time. On the other hand, you've got a guy like Jake Arrieta who's pitching yesterday, gets hurt on the mound in a game he doesn't need to be playing. Because baseball, what was it, like a half an hour later after that game started? They go, oh, yeah, we're done. We're good. We're done. We're going to suspend spring training and the season's going to start late too. I mean, you have things like this that have popped up as well. I imagine this can be much harder. I'm guessing, we'll talk to Coom about it in a couple minutes here. I'm guessing it'll be much harder for pitchers to ramp back up than hitters.
They're generally higher sort of physical variance, it seems like, because of the specificity in stretching out and how long you should go. Yeah. And it's not just the same as getting up and swinging a bat.
No, it's not. And I don't, some guys will go back to zero, I would imagine, in terms of throwing stamina. I know that guys will throw on the side. I'm sure if you're not allowed back into your spring training facility over the next couple of days, like, you know, if you remember the Cubs, they've shut that down. Nobody's back in there until Monday. I was reading Bruce Levine of The Score tweet that just, a couple minutes ago. They're going to clean the whole facility. Other teams are not doing that or not doing that yet or haven't felt the need to do it. So be it. They're getting advice from the people they need to get advice from. But I still think that, you know, you're going to come back in. Pitchers are going to come back in at some point here to the facilities. Some won't check out and some will, in terms of not being healthy and this virus, just in terms of being ready to throw.
Right.
And it's going to be a little bit more like old timey, you know, Verona Beach Dodgers stuff where it's like, I came back into camp to get in shape again. This guy's Mickey Mantle's 30 pounds overweight. We got to get him back down.
Yeah, they're dry out and lose 20 pounds.
Because we're the
right?
Yankees. We need this kind of thing. You know, I think we're in for a much more old school spring training thing.
We know the Lincoln Park Zoo has closed. Now, Shedd Aquarium has joined those closing their doors temporarily. The first of the museum campus institutions to close. Shedd Aquarium now closed.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You think the fish know?
Like, what's water?
Right, yeah. What's water? But I imagine the beluga whales are obviously smart enough to understand that people aren't there. Because, you know, they're smarter.
Sure, but I don't think we're going to have a situation like the gangs of monkeys where the piranhas are fighting over smaller food source.
I just wonder if, like, the fish comes out for the day. It's like, hello, and like where are my people? Like, I was already. I've been in wardrobe, and this is my star turn. And there's no one here to watch me do that thing. Where I flip my tail over.
Do you think they'll have to get in shows just to keep, you know, practice, like to keep in shape, like once it back opens back up?
Like, I know in the main tank, you know, you've got the tarpon that swim around, you have the bonnet head sharks that swim around,
right?
And the sea turtle, the injured sea turtle that comes out, the rescue,
of
I forgot his name, but and then
Phil Struthers.
No, he has a name that you can Google it, but he has to paddle with his front flippers because his back flippers were hurt in an accident of some kind. You know, they feed the fish. I don't think they care. There's the giant alligator snapping turtle.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally sit there, like, open his mouth. It's like, oh, he moved.
You guys go? Have you gotten to the show there with the dolphins and the beluga and the hawk and everything?
Yeah.
There was a hawk. Was there always a hawk?
Red tail hawk, yeah.
Last time I went, there was a hawk and it's just swooping by. And I love the, you know, the guy who does the play by play, right? The announcer throughout the whole thing is just like, yeah, it's a hawk. And it's not in the water, but we have one. So here it is. And the hawk just kind of screams through over the thing. And I thought it was great that it is kind of, yes, we know this is a little crazy. And it's not a, you know.
But why not?
Yes, of course, why not?
And you know my thing with falconry.
You're a big falconer.
Someday.
So we're going to have to take up hobbies while this whole thing runs its course. I think you should take up falconry. Think about this. This is an event that you don't need other people around you. You do it in wide open spaces, away from everyone.
Yeah, but I need a bird of prey.
You do,
to
yes.
do my bidding.
You do need
for
a bird of prey.
That's not hard to come by. Come on, we can find you a bird of prey.
I mean, I know they're around. They're all over the city.
We got a listener who makes gavels. You think we got a falconer to text in?
And speaking of which, I don't know if you know that in Chicago, and this is true. We were talking before about the green line pigeon. Or the blue line pigeon.
Yeah, well, blue line pigeon is kind of your pedestrian pigeon. The green line is the bougie stuff.
Yeah, but we were discussing as you were talking about the Chinese restaurant, the fabulous Chinese restaurant that has the really good steamed pigeon and the soy and tin and the green tea. They have observed, I'm not making this up, because of the success of both the red tail hawk and the Cooper's hawk in Chicago, yeah. How well they've taken to the urban environment, as well as peregrine falcon, too. They have observed learned behaviors of hawks in Chicago following L trains.
That's awesome.
Why do they follow L trains?
Because pigeons.
Because when they roll